I declare the meeting open at 5:30 PM. I welcome councillors, management, members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. Could I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that the meeting is being recorded and will be made available on the City of Melbourne website before close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of the meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should there be any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of the Council Business Team after the meeting. I request that all mobile phones be turned off for the duration of the meeting. The agenda comprises 10 reports from management, none of which are confidential, and one item of general business. We've received an apology from Councillor Watts, and I was going to say Councillor Main may be a little late, but his timing as usual is impeccable. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by committee, please disclose the type and the nature of the interest prior to consideration of the item. Could I call on a council to move a resolution adopting the minutes of Open Meeting 23 held on the 12th of November 2013? Thank you, Councillor Oak. Thank you, Councillor Leppert. Seconded. I'll put that motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Are there any matters arising from minutes of the previous meeting?
Yes, Lord Mayor.
Councillor Leppert.
Councillors received correspondence from Mr Gregory Young, the Director of the Palace Theatre, in relation to Agenda Item 6.2 of the FMC meeting in question, which considered the application to redevelop the Palace Theatre. Mr Young notes that the presentation made by Mr Matthew Matiski, representing the redevelopment project manager Sinclair Brooks, was unclear regarding the tenant's desire to stay on past the expiry of the lease on the 31st of May 2014, and Mr Young wishes to convey on behalf of the Palace Theatre Proprietary Limited that it is their desire to remain on as tenants up until whenever a building permit is issued, and that this has been communicated to the owners on several occasions, along with requests to extend the lease. Chair, I request that this information be minuted.
Is there any objection to that being minuted? In that case, so noted. Thank you, Councillor. In accordance with the Council resolution of the 26th of March 2013, we set aside a 15-minute period to provide for members of the public to ask questions. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration. And I note that Peter and Julie Collier have asked us to ask questions tonight. Is there anybody else who would like to ask us a question? Thanks, John. Could I ask Peter to approach the lectern and ask the question?
My name is Peter Collier, as you know, and you may remember me from 2 weeks ago. I'm chairman of the Owners Corporation at 25 Hotham Street, East Melbourne, and you are aware that the council has notified residents that from June next year, parking permits will no longer be issued. The legality of this decision is not in dispute. What is in question is the wisdom of taking away permits because of a clause that may be amended if there is the political will to do so. It is common sense, in my opinion, to change a rule if its continuation has undesirable consequences with no material benefits. Anecdotal evidence suggests there's not a congestion problem.
Peter, it's a chance to ask a question, a statement.
I have to do a preamble just to put my point.
It's a question time, Peter.
Well, last week there was quite a dissertation from people out here. I was here and 2 weeks ago, and I feel I should have the right to finish what I'm going to
say. Peter, we are the ones who determine. You don't have rights. They're our procedures. It is for you to ask a question.
Oh, okay. Well, my question is, given that there is anecdotal... planning permit and Section 173 agreement, so the existing quality of living in Hotham Street is not compromised, which would be explained better if I had been able to say.
I think we answered this before. We can't vary a contract which you entered with a vendor.
I'm asking, you're saying that you cannot, because I've been told that it can be.
No, you have...
I don't know if
Well, I'll take some legal advice. The contract of sale between yourselves and a vendor is not...
All right. A notice of motion. I'm sorry.
Correct. Well, we seek to undertake a range of on-site meetings, do mail-outs, have participate in Melbourne website up and down, and also to attend Kensington Residents Association meeting in February, but we would look to undertake and complete that probably over a 4 to 5 week period through most of February into early March.
Excellent. Councillor Leppett?
Microphone's working. Excellent. Thanks, Ian. There's another process going on at the moment, a report to council, part of which was released for to be made public. Council officers are looking at the properties vaguely identified in Arden-Macaulay open space amendments and the structure plan, I beg your pardon, as potential sites for future open space. Do we have any update about any other sites to the east of this site? And is there anything to report on likelihood of any other sites being able to be turned over to open space in the coming years?
We're still looking at opportunities there, but certainly I haven't got any specific updates to make at this time.
Thanks, Ian. Further question?
You mentioned the trees. The plane trees you suggest are declining. We've had a fair few submitters suggest that it would be inappropriate to take them out. There is a proposal here to replace some of them with other trees. How long would that canopy take to, come back to fullness, whatever the word is?
The trees that we are proposing could be replaced. Are planes which have been pruned around and underneath power lines, so they aren't what I would refer to as sort of really large full canopied trees. A number of them are declining, so we would be happy to either stage a replacement of some of the healthier ones. Certainly getting new trees in, getting them growing, as I often talk about, the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. So that's what we need to get to a full canopy. But certainly within that 5+ year time frame, we certainly get very significant impact from new trees.
So are there any trees that are suggested to be removed there that aren't part of our urban forest strategy and identifying trees that are already slated for removal, or how much does this align with... I apologise for the questions, I'm very tired. Are there any trees that are slated to be removal here that aren't part of an existing strategy?
Well, I guess in a sense all of the trees that are in the public realm are part of our urban forest, and a big part of the urban forest strategy is to ensure that we have a very healthy, robust, resilient forest into the future and achieve a doubling of our tree canopy by 2040. So in that strategic sense, all of the trees that are within that site are part of this. I think that there's always a consideration that we need to plant for the future. We will be able to increase tree numbers through this open space, and the timing of removal of any existing declining trees can be adjusted to suit and to ensure that it's done in a strategic way which is supported by the community. So we would be happy to plant new trees, let the canopies come up before other trees come out. So that's not an unfamiliar process for us to do. Certainly how we proceed with that and the recommendations for precise change would be part or would be informed by the community engagement.
Thanks, Ian. Yeah. We'll just keep things moving along because we've got a big agenda. Councillor Oak.
Well, I think you actually answered my question, because apologies. I think maybe you would jump the gun in that question about the specific trees, because my understanding is that tonight we're just recommending further consultation about the concept design and including that design of these trees, but if part of the consultation... through the consultation process, the trees are desired to stay or a different replacement species is recommended from the community, then that's obviously what you'll report back to us next year.
Correct.
Okay, cool.
Okay, thanks, Ian. You may take a seat. We've got one person requesting a chance to address us, and that is Tony Dare. I call on Tony Dare to address us. You've got 3 minutes, Tony. You've got a buzzer that'll sound at two, and then you've got 1 minute to wrap up. Thanks.
Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and Councillors, my name is Anthony Dare and I live at 161 Rankins Road, Kensington, which is right opposite where this proposed park would be put. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on this item. By now, councillors, you'll realise from the objections that have already been emailed to you that a substantial number of residents directly affected by this proposal object to it. I have 9 of these objections right here. Hopefully you've received those. Plus, I understand there could be 3 more. So that's a substantial number of objections, given that probably only about 15 households are directly affected by this proposal. And that also, given that we only learned on Sunday, we happened to notice that this item was going to appear tonight. So everything that's happened, that you have received, has been conceived of and composed and sent to you over the past couple of days. We're well aware that the city faces a crisis with regard to C190 in open space. However, 1,200 square metres yielded by this proposal is a tiny amount of open space compared with what is needed to make C190 viable. It is trivial compared with the open space likely to be lost along the Moonee Ponds Creek Linear Reserve owing to the proposed east-west link elevated roadway. So I'd recommend that to respect the dignity of the council and the C190 open space crisis, that you shouldn't really discuss this minuscule proposal in that context. With regard to objections, residents cite a number of reasons for their objections, including two-way traffic on Rankins Road, where currently there is one-way traffic, possible increased congestion on Rankins Road at the Macaulay Road intersection, the possibility that proposed park will exacerbate drug trafficking and drug use, given that it adjoins a railway station. I say exacerbates because it's already a minor nuisance. And a substantial reduction in parking of 18 spaces, despite there being 2 cafes in Rankins Road that recently obtained planning permits over the objections of local residents based on the existing number of parking places. And there are many other reasons that you'll see in the objections that have been sent to you. In hindsight, it's a pity that this proposal was not canvassed with affected residents prior to it becoming a council resolution. We first found out about it by reading it in The Age, I think in September. We hoped that it would fade away, but it hasn't. It could also have been canvassed through the Kensington Association, an organisation that
Tony.
Exists for such a purpose.
Thanks, Tony.
We would
Tony.
Like it to be set aside.
Excellent. Great.
Thank you.
Any questions for Tony? Councillor Ike.
I just have one question, Tony.
Yes.
You are opposed to us consulting with the community about this park, or you're just opposed to the park outright? Because tonight we're just making a decision about going out and actually talking about the proposal.
Unfortunately, I didn't do the discipline of reading my speech and timing it, so I didn't get to the part where I'm suggesting that the level of public opposition to this proposal right at this point...
Sorry, my question was, so you don't... So just
I don't think...
That's a yes. You don't think we should...
I would
can
say,
I ask my question? Sorry, can
yeah,
I ask
sorry.
My question? You are asking us not to consult further on this park.
That's right.
Okay, that's it. That's
thanks, Tony. That's
sure.
That's great. Question answered. Any other questions for Tony? Thanks, Tony. You can grab
you.
A seat. So I now call on a councillor to move a motion. Councillor Leppert, is that seconded?
No. Can I move an amended motion, please,
you can.
Chair? And there it is. I move it as appears on the screen.
Excellent. A seconded to that motion? Councillor Oak. Councillor Leppert.
Thank you, Chair, and I'll get to the substance of the amendment in just a moment. I think it's worth very, very briefly revisiting the background here. The open space strategy already identifies Kensington, as Mr. Shears said, as one of the most lacking areas in the municipality for existing open space for residents, let alone what future populations might require. It's in the same category as parts of West Melbourne and South Bank, but it's right up there in the area of greatest need. C190 feedback, which was referred to by Mr. Dare, we've had huge amounts of feedback on that. Of course, it's a series of planning scheme amendments with quite some interest. But when C190 itself was put out for exhibition, the single biggest issue that was brought up through that process was the open space issue and the lack of open space in the Arden Macaulay area and in parts of Kensington itself. So as a response to that, council made a series of amendments to C190, but separate to that process, instigated a couple of extra processes to ask officers to go away and look at options for new open space on the Kensington side of Arden Macaulay in particular, also to the west of Boundary Road. There have been difficulties in doing that through the property purchasing side, and so this second process is looking at council-owned assets to see if there aren't opportune places for council to, build new open space. So that's the background as to why we've come here today. On top of all of that, of course, we've got other things like the East-West Link posing a particular threat and uncertainty as to existing open space like the Moonee Ponds Creek Corridor, and who knows how that's all going to end up. And so the imperative for new open space in Kensington is greater than ever before. This is only just one potential solution, though. I note the comment that it's only 1,200 square metres, and I think the word used was minuscule. However, no one's suggesting that we can solve all of Arden Macaulay's open space shortage problems by finding one park and do it all in one hit. It's going to be a series of smaller projects designed to cater for existing and future communities. And so with respect, I don't buy that argument. And the officers have come back and said that this is actually quite a cost-effective argument. Councillors will look at point 9 in the attachment to the report, and in fact of the substantial report, suggesting that if this proposal were to go ahead, and that's not what we're going to agree to tonight, but if it were to go ahead, it would cost less than $1 million, $950,000, and the equivalent cost if we were to purchase property and acquire open space that way would be in the order of $4 million. There is fund in the open space. There are funds in the open space fund for this particular proposal, and so that's not the issue there. However, I think the point's been made by officers that this is a more cost-effective way about solving Arden Macaulay's open space shortages than other proposals are. So very briefly, we're not going to decide in principle tonight to support the park. That's not what this is about. All it is about sending this out for community endorsement, and it's quite an uncontroversial proposal, I would have thought, and so I support the proposal. The one small change there, of course, is to do with parking, and I think that that's because parking has been a strong item of feedback through the submissions that we have received so far, and they haven't all been negative. There are a couple of extremely positive submissions in there. I'm talking about, making sure that the kids who are currently using Rankin's Road as a football field can, have a safer place to play, and, the improved amenity of the suburbs and, increased property values, things like that. So it's not all negative. However, the small exception here is that I don't think parking should become sidetrack the community engagement process that is to come. There are a couple of existing very short-term parking spots there at the moment, and the removal of those is conspicuous and I think unnecessary. And so with this small amendment, I think that it takes the parking question, it depoliticises it slightly. So I think it's a better starting point for community engagement than otherwise it would be. So as a whole, I endorse this. I commend this motion.
Thanks, Councillor Abbott. Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. I support this recommendation, and I do note, as per my question to Mr. Shears, that it is about endorsing the concept plan and the community engagement plan around this proposed open space in Kensington. I support this for many of the reasons that Councillor Leppard has already addressed, and I don't want to go into an argument to address many of the concerns that have been raised in the letters that we've been sent, because I believe that will come through the consultation process. And when we come to make a decision about the park or otherwise, I will elaborate further the numerous public health and wellbeing benefits as well as sustainability benefits of even a small pocket park. But I won't do that now. But I do want to make a point that I feel like that it would be really important as part of the consultation process, if possible, to bring some of the stories and if not data from our experiences in Errol Street, North Melbourne. We received considerable negative attack, I guess, or about the installation of that park in Errol Street. But I believe since it's been installed, even though it was delayed by many years, since it's been installed, it's only been positive feedback, and the use is extraordinary, even with limited facilities that have been put in, which I think is has been great to see. So I would ask if we could include some data or stories from the Errol Street experience that may address some of the concerns that come out of the consultation process from residents. I support the recommendation. I thank Councillor Leppard and Councillor Wood for identifying a potential open space area, knowing that we're finding it very difficult to find space in Kensington for this. The only other thing I wanted to say is that there is a very small pocket park around the corner in Robertson Street that we don't actually own. It's actually private property, and it's under threat for being, I guess, absorbed within a potential future development. And that concerns me, because it's a small park, and yet between 3 o'clock and 5:30, the surrounding suburb come from all over the place after school and before dinner and bath time, and there's hundreds of kids in this space. And it's just amazing to see the amount of use and utilisation of a small space within the community. And if that goes, we have an issue already, but we'll have an even further issue if that park is absorbed.
Thanks, Councillor Oak. Any other speakers for the motion? Any speakers against the motion? You want to speak against it, Councillor Mayne? You want to speak? Councillor Mayne.
Just very briefly, Councillor, it is unusual to put up a park proposal and have more objections than supporters. And so I think we need to bear that in mind. And I just also make the point that there's a growing difference between our aspirations and our financial capacity on this council. We need to be aware of the deteriorating financial position, lowest cash balance in 20 years. And unless something came out of left field, a windfall out of left field that gave us a sudden burst of cash, it's these sorts of projects which I think we're going to struggle to fund, frankly. But this is only going out to consultation, and so I think it is an innovative proposal, a councillor-driven proposal, so I think we should support going out to future consultation, but in no way take it that means this is a sure thing come the budget round.
Thanks, Councillor Mayne. Any other speakers to the motion? I'll just say a few brief words, pick up on Councillor Mayne's point. I'm always a little bit worried when we talk about tough budget times and then we mention the open space strategy, because that is a dedicated open space fund meant for the purchase of open space. So that's what this funding is for. The other thing is too that this is actually about sending out for wider consultation, because at the moment we've got the thoughts of residents who are adjacent to the proposal, and while they're very, very important, this is about open space right across the municipality, so it's important that we engage the whole suite of different views on this open space, so that's why that's really important as well. The other point I want to pick up on is and Councillor Leppard's already raised this point about the comment about it being minuscule. It is minuscule when you talk about the return on investment, that instead of $4 million in freehold, that we've got to spend of about $950,000. So these are the sort of opportunities we've got to take in a highly urbanised environment. But rather than being minuscule, it more than doubles the canopy cover if this goes ahead. Close to doubles the size of open space that's currently there. It captures stormwater, it reduces the heat island effect, and it increases property values. So we've had a few submissions which interestingly said that property values would drop 15 to 20% when they're on parkland, which is not what we've found over every part of the municipality. So this would have to be a fairly unique situation for that to occur. And the Herald Sun and all its advertisements screaming property values on parks and screaming them as really attractive developments would also have to be wrong. So I certainly refute that. So that being said, we aren't deciding on this tonight. This is about going out to the wider consultation, and I think that that's something that the City of Melbourne is very good at. So residents who are adjacent to this proposal will have another opportunity to have input into this process. But I certainly commend the motion. I commend Councillor Leppard's work on this as well. Councillor Leppard, would you like to conclude debate?
Just in replying to the items raised in the debate briefly, I can't help but comment on the comments made by Councillor Mayne. I think the Open Space Fund has between $5-6 million in at the moment. Some of that's tentatively allocated to certain projects, others of it isn't. This project, should it go ahead, and again, we're not endorsing that tonight, is something in the order of $950,000. The Open Space Fund cannot be reallocated unless Council makes a specific decision to do that. I think that would be highly problematic, given that developers have been contributing to that over a long period of time with a very set purpose in mind. And it's inappropriate to let it sit there and draw income, because we're also deceiving developers for the purpose about why we're collecting that fund in the first place. So I think it's not a simple case of, you know, budget frugality and all the rest of it. We do have the Open Space Fund there specifically for the purpose of overcoming our massive shortfall in open space in the areas that need it most, and this is one of those. With all of that in mind, I commend the motion.
Thanks, Councillor Leppett. I'll put that motion to the vote. All those in favour? That is carried unanimously. I'll now call on Councillor Fawcett to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the People's City Portfolio.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. There's one report from management for consideration under the People's City Portfolio, Agenda Item 6.9, Homelessness Advisory Committee Revised Terms of Reference. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item?
Nope.
Okay. In that case, I'm happy to move the motion on the screen. Is there a seconder? Okay, Councillor Oak. I'll just speak very briefly to the motion. The terms of reference is being updated by this motion to include a greater and more concentrated reference to the homelessness strategy, which you would think is rather important. But also important is the second part of this, and that is to extend the number of members of the Homelessness Advisory Committee by two. Sitting on the, or chairing the Homelessness Advisory Committee myself, I know just how important that is, and the 12 current members are great contributors, or have been great contributors. Extending the membership by two is important because it does give an opportunity for those with, or a greater opportunity for those with direct experience of homelessness to contribute to this committee as well. I note we already do have one person in that category on the current committee, but we could potentially have another two, depending on, of course, who fills those spots. But it is open to people in that category, which I think is important. Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Councillor Foster. I support this recommendation. We have many advisory committees, and most of them have been around for a long time, and we have had new council plans and new council goals and also new strategies since their inception, and it's important that we revise the terms of reference, and especially the people that we want to be on these advisory committees to ensure that they reflect the strategy goals and the council plan, and that's what this is recommending we do, so I support the recommendation.
Would any other councillor like to speak to the motion? Any councillor like to speak against the motion? In that case, I've got nothing further to add other than what I said earlier, and to say that I would greatly welcome an additional two members, particularly to the Homelessness Advisory Committee. So on that basis, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. I dare say I can now move on to planning matters. Is that right? Yes. In that case, I'll call on Councillor Ong to assume the role of Chair in relation to the planning portfolio.
Thank you, Councillor Foster. Tonight, we have seven reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio. Six of these are basically ministerial applications, which is actually a record for any of our future Melbourne Committee meeting, as far as I can remember. I'll start with the first item on the agenda, which is 6.1, Ministerial Planning Referral TPM 2013-2, which is 57 to 59 Hague Street, South Bank. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? Nope. In that case, I'd like to move a motion which is different from that one, yes. Up there. I'll just let councillors have a read of that. I call on a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Leppett seconded. I'll have a quick word to this. It's pretty straightforward. The officers have looked at it and worked with the developer and also with the Department of Planning to come to a conclusion. And we've added in there the additional item of the developer contribution in line with Planning Scheme Amendment 208, which has been out there for a while. And other than that, I'm not going to say too much more to this particular item. We have other items to come. Councillor Leppard.
The tower setback and separation conditions are extremely important, and I agree with your amendment, Councillor Ong, and I support the officer's recommendation plus this small change.
Would any other councillors like to speak to the motion? Yes, Councillor Mayne.
Yeah, look, just briefly, it's a 30,000 square metre application. It's only just over the threshold for the Minister at 25,000. The conditions are important, as is the amendment there with the developer contribution. I was up in Brisbane 2 weeks ago, and state government up there, $20,000 levy on every apartment. Massive. City of Sydney, $2 million a week coming through the door at the moment for the last 15 months in developer contributions. Our arrangement historically has been a fraction of what has applied in Sydney and Brisbane, and I think it is appropriate, as we have that policy out there, that we start applying it or requesting that the Minister apply it as these ministerial applications come through.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. Would any other councillors like to speak to this? In that case, I'll put this to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I declare the motion carried unanimously. The next item on the agenda is Ministerial Planning Approval Referral TPM 2013-10, which is 464 to 466 Collins Street and 83 Williams Street. I'd like to call Martin Williams to do a short presentation on this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This site is on the northern side of Collins Street, one block to the west of William. On the corner of William Street is the former National Bank building, which is a heritage-graded building. The subject site is adjacent to it and is 11.5 metres wide. Behind it is St James Lane. And there are further heritage buildings on the southern side of Collins Street. The Winfield and Alderfleet buildings are adjacent to the MLC Tower on this corner. Adjacent on the western side is an office building built for the Government Insurance Office in 1970, which is about 17 storeys high, about 63 metres. I'll show you a diagram of that shortly. These are perspectives from the applicant. The National Bank building here has granted air rights to the applicant for permit, which has changed the design. Earlier it didn't have this air right over the bank. It results in a modest cantilevered section over the top of the National Bank building. And from this perspective, the building in front, the National Bank, is in effect a podium to the tower behind. The setbacks of this segment of the building are generally satisfactory to everyone, including our heritage advisor and urban design. On the western side, we have this wall on the boundary. The maximum height of the building is 181 metres. And this is 63, so this is about 120 odd metres above the adjacent existing building. And that wall is on the boundary. This is the elevation from the rear, from St James Lane. There is a podium with car parking in it here, which is approximately 29 metres tall, but there's no setback to St James Lane in the application as it now stands. To Collins Street, the existing heritage-graded building, which is currently the maker's mark but has been an architect's office in the past, is being retained back to a distance of 6 metres. And the building behind it is proposed to gradually cantilever back out over the retained building to a setback of 4 metres here. This is St James Lane from the rear, and all of the buildings at the moment are substantially lower in height than the applicant proposes in this location here. From the Collins Street footpath, and this is the retained Maker's Mark building, and the proposal cantilevers out above the seventh floor to be 4 metres behind the Collins Street footpath. From the rear, this is a car park mechanised system, and these are variations on a winking light sort of system that the applicant is proposing to brighten up what would otherwise be a fairly plain car parking facade. This one would respond to a car going up by having lights come into play as the car passed them on the way to being parked by a mechanical system. These are the floor plans which you have in your papers. From the Collins Street frontage, we have a 6 metre setback here at the moment, and the mechanical parking system at the rear. The interior of the Maker's Mark building is being radically changed, but the intention is to restore the architectural flavour of the interior to make a distinctive entry to the residential building. And as we go up, these are residential layouts. Now, the applicant has said to us since the delegate report was finished that their preference would be to have these taken as indicative only, and they would change following market response to the building once a permit was issued. Now, our submission has been that there should be no reliance on borrowed light in the ultimate design, and that's what the conditions would recommend if a permit were to be issued. Collins Street elevation shows the heights of the buildings. 181 metres for the proposed tower, 63 for 470 Collins as it now is, and 40 metres for the bank building existing on the corner. The applicant has suggested that the redevelopment of this property, which is possible, would be a 29-storey building which would be roughly 100 metres high. Other buildings on small sites like this include the Architects Institute on the corner of Exhibition Street and Flinders Lane, and the Phoenix Hotel redevelopment, which are about 80 metres high, but they're about here. This is the elevation adjacent to the National Bank with the cantilevered section overhanging it. The St James Lane elevation with the car park up to this point. And a section through the building showing a quite small area devoted to car parking. There are 74 car parking spaces there.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. I've got a question, Councillor Wood.
Thank you, Chair. Martin, you mentioned, I didn't know about the sort of applicant wanting to kind of hold on to the floor layout. Given we don't have a minimum apartment size, does that mean if markets decide that they could effectively make the apartments much smaller than indicated?
They could. We have had variations up and down post approval of planning permits. When market response has come back, there's been some instances where the apartments have become larger, and some where they've been designed so they can be halved in size or doubled in size, and sometimes the number of apartments has simply gone up and the size has gone down, depending on the particular market response to the particular development and location.
Any other councillors? Yes, Councillor Leppard.
Thanks, Martin. I noticed that the conclusion to the delegate report is different to the recommendation from management. And can you just walk us through why that is?
There were discussions with the applicant after the delegate report was concluded, and we only have third-party rights to this application on heritage grounds. Now, there's not a lot of distance between what the applicant proposes and what our heritage advisor would accept. So this was an attempt to keep the door open to negotiating with the applicant rather than sending off a potentially forlorn complaint to the minister with no third-party rights.
Thank you. Any other questions from office? Martin, you can sit down. Thank you, Martin. I now call on Kristen Whittle, BeatSmart architect, to address Kristen from BeatSmart.
Just waiting for my...
Okay, 3 minutes. Chart. After 2 minutes, there'll be a beep, and then you can 1 minute to conclude.
Well...
You better start.
Well, okay. Next... It'd be nice if we can, yeah, reformat that. Okay, you've got the basic parameters of our project here. It's a 55-storey building. It's a very slender blade-like tower. It's a very striking building that sits on the western flank of the city and is set to really become a landmark development in this side of the city. This is a striking development that really combines the new with the old. We plan to completely refurbish the building back to its original state back here in 1908 as the original shipping office building. We've been doing a lot of work with the Melbourne Heritage Action Group, who've been working alongside us and confirmed their acceptance of our overall strategy of retaining the overall character of the salon foyer type strategy that you see here in the old photograph. We've been working on the ground plane with them and the heritage building in the front to maintain a significant 15 metre deep room that acts as the heritage component of the building, and the new component follows on from the backside there with the centre core and rear car stacking strategy at the back. This is the view from Collins Street. We've been seeking to detach the main building that you see here from the heritage building here. We've been looking at a 6 metre setback from the front to the back there, which brings it in line with the adjoining building. The balconies on top spring out and cantilever out 2 metres in the front there. We think this gives a significant level of detachment and visual separation between the two forms. We've also been looking at the art strategy. We believe that the laneway at the back on St. James's Lane is a fairly lacklustre laneway. We've been looking at introducing a kinetic art piece, utilising some of the modern-day technology for this component. We've been looking at a very dynamic strategy here, which finishes as you drive in, where the building opens up at the back there to form something very beguiling and unique. Essentially, with the planning strategy here, we've been looking to divide the bedrooms so that all bedrooms face on directly into view and into full glazing, and utilising the side wall here, which has had some conjecture, as more of a back-of-house wall element. So what we have is the core and some of the back-of-house functions here alongside here with all of the bedrooms radiating around there to give us full view and amenity to the external environment and onto balcony spaces. We're very keen to basically propose something that's completely unique for Melbourne, which is a new loft-type strategy, which can be expanded three-dimensionally in the building to offer something completely different into the marketplace in Melbourne. Thank you.
Councillors, I've got a question. Yes.
On the heritage question, the delegate report says at the top of page 30, with the exception of the facade restoration, the proposed development will not enhance the heritage place at 464 Collins Street. Has more work been done since that assessment piece has been done?
Apart from the work that we've done in the original submission, no further work's gone on. But we do maintain our position that the reintegration of the internal details that you see in this photograph will be brought into place into the new facility, and certainly in terms of the scope, size of space that is represented in that photograph, we're re-representing that in the new facility with the same floor to ceiling heights and the same idea of the four pillars in the centre of the space. So as much as possible, we'll be working towards reintegrating the same aesthetic approach that you see here into the new building.
Okay. I was under the impression after the presentation that that interior space would be restored, but that's not the case.
Well, no, because in order to build the building, we have to remove this part of the section of the building. Yep. The front facade will be retained, but that character will be reinstated afterwards.
Thought so. Just wanted to check. Thanks.
Kristen, are there any other examples of more creative or innovative cantilevered overhanging in Melbourne or Australia?
We believe it's fairly unique at this precise moment. There are, I think, forthcoming proposals that I understand are occurring within Melbourne about air rights and looking to understand the more sort of three-dimensional parameters of sites. I think this is fairly unique, but I think from our perspective, it's a necessary strategy in order to protect both the adjoining wonderful heritage building, but also the amazing views that we have over the eastern flank. Overall, with the sort of light touch strategy that we've got on the facade here, which is fully glazed, we think that forms a nice complementary relationship with the overall form of the tower.
I just got one question for you, Kristen. If you go back to the floor plans, you mentioned, yes, that one. You mentioned that it's been designed to keep all the back of house on the blank wall, which is different from what's currently in the submitted plans.
It is. Yeah, we've relooked at this. We knew that this was going to become an issue, so what we wanted to do was to propose tonight and affirm that there's an obvious capability of this floor plan to manoeuvre the bedrooms such that they all receive abundant large-scale views out of the building and aren't reliant on this adjoining wall for views.
So the current small light windows in the plan, have they all disappeared?
No, we want to retain those. We think those are very important in order to activate the west facade of the building. We believe that they can offer some unique kind of level of occupation on the facade, but we'll have to work through in detail how they relate to the internal planning scenarios as it matures as a plan.
And also its relation to 470 Collins Street, should it get developed?
I think should it get developed, then those windows would obviously be subsumed within the adjoining development if it gets to a significant height, and we accept that in the future that may happen. But we design the building such that we're not reliant on those views or windows.
All right. Thank you. Next, I'd like to call on Nicholas Wilkinson from Equiset to present. Yep. And
My colleague is Nick Wilkinson. My name is Lorenz Grollo from the Grollo Group. We're currently the applicant and the developer.
Okay. You have 3 minutes, 2 minutes to beep the sound. You've got 1 minute to finish.
Sure.
Proceed.
A little over 12 months ago, we stood here in this very room and spoke about a project in North Melbourne, of which we were granted a planning permit, and we thank you. Our team went through an extensive consultation process with the neighbours, and we believe that we got a satisfactory result. That project on the 1st of March will be launched, known as Assembly. A little earlier this year, we lodged for a project for the entire redevelopment of the Rialto Forecourt, very close to 464 Collins Street. We went through a consultative process, and that it was granted a planning permit. We aim to start that project, which will change that end of Collins Street, sometime mid next year. We come to you today to talk about another exemplar project, and 464 is quite special, and that we believe that it's certainly going to be an international exemplar. I think it's a challenge for everyone around the room, including the developers and builders, to do more. I've had the pleasure and the angst of building some of the other complicated projects around Melbourne, and including the Phoenix, 27 Little Collins Street, which we do have a 4-metre cantilever at level 26, Carlton Wellbeing, just off Rathdown Street, and others. And I've got to say, we can do more. We can do it better. And for us, this is what 464 Collins Street is all about. Yes, it's about keeping Melbourne in check with international architecture. But the key thing for us is to not only seek out a permit with the relevant authorities, but ensure that we actually create and deliver an exemplar for Melbourne, of which we can all collectively be proud. Now, I know that there's been a number of applicants out there that talk about tall buildings. Some of them don't even live in this city. They want to get their planning permit and then see what happens. The scary thing about us is that we actually want to make it happen. And we live in Melbourne. We work on Collins Street. We want to do what's best for Melbourne. and doing more using international exemplar architects like Bates Smart, working with our adjoining owners, working with the state government and Melbourne City Council is important to us. So we only ask that today that we keep the lines of communication open and allow our group to consult with you further as this process unfolds. Thank you.
Thank you, Lawrence. Questions from councillors for Mr. Grawler? Yes, Councillor May.
Look, Eric, can you share any more learnings from particularly the Phoenix as to how you've responded with the design from this? You talked about the trials and tribulations of blade towers. How is this better or improved based on particularly the Phoenix learnings?
Look, the Phoenix has actually been quite complicated. I mean, we're building on a very small footprint, and there's probably a lot of people that thought it was never going to be built. We've learnt a lot out of it. We've had our own crew on site. We've got our own form workers on site. We've got our own jump form systems. And I think there's a lot that can be learnt out of that and applied in terms of new technology to the way we build. And let's face it, the construction industry needs to change. We need to be more innovative. We need to be able to build better so we can afford better. And that's part of our learnings that we've taken out of the Phoenix and applying those to 464 Collins Street.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Grawler, you may take your seat now. I'd like to move a motion. We can put it up. Not this one, the other one that I've written. That's the one I handed out before. I call on the councillor to second the motion. Lord Mayor, thank you. I'll quickly say a few words on this one. Thank you to the presenters and also the questions from councillors. And it's clear from the presentation from Mr. Williams and also from the applicants, the architects and the developer, indications are that they have understood that there are concerns raised by some of our officers, and the report indicated such. There also, clearly, there is a willingness to further discuss this development proposal and see what can be done on both sides to try to get a better outcome. The city's role here in dealing with big development projects, mostly ministerial approvals or ministerial applications, is to try to get good outcomes for the city, to look at each of the development proposals, to look at how it relates to others. And we've got some concerns here that has not yet quite been resolved, and rather than to go with what was originally proposed, is to defer this to the 17th, which is two Tuesdays from now, and to allow further discussions to be undertaken by our planners and the applicants, and to also express what conditions or what changes we would like to see to the proposal before we make our recommendations back to the Department of Planning and to the Minister. So I think it's heartening to see that the developers have stated that they're keen to come to the table and talk further with Council and to try and to find a solution that's workable. The alternative to this is to just say no to it, and then it's totally out of our hands, and depending on what the Department of Planning recommends to the Minister, and we might find that the outcome is worse than what we would like to have. So I encourage further discussions and look forward to the Council meeting on the 17th. Lord Mayor.
Thank you. I echo that, and I also want to thank Lawrence Grawler for his view that we do want to consult further on this. I mean, my basic position is I'd like to be able to say yes to the Minister around this development. But let me take a step back from that. I have a concern about the way that we as councillors are being advised through these reports. If you consider the two that we've already looked at, and one, although I won't anticipate debate on that, in 6.1, the delegates' report raised concerns about that development, and they cited their, you know, height, setbacks, tower separation, site development, heritage concerns, all those bundle of things, and yet the recommendation from management to us was that we approve it, which we just did. With this one, we're kind of in the middle. Again, the delegates' report raises a number of suggestions and suggests that we object to it, but the original management report seems to take a step the other way towards saying, well, if they do certain things, we'd be prepared to approve it. So despite the delegates' report being where it is, the management recommendation falls in the middle. If you take a third one, which we'll look at 6.6, which is Elizabeth Street, again, the delegates' report raises concerns of height, of setbacks, of tower separations, of site overdevelopment, the same things that have been raised here, but the management management recommendation is simply that we should object to it. So I don't sort of have a clear line of sight on what the differentiations are following the delegates' reports to get to the management report in order for us to make a decision. And I'd overlay on that, in each of these cases, these are ministerial planning referrals. And I take up Councillor Ong's point that we don't want to be dealt out of this altogether. So it seems to me that it's all very well for officers to recommend to us, look, here is the basic set of rules that we're going to operate by, we're going to put a line in the sand, a peg in the ground, and that's what we're going to recommend. Therefore, we've got to object to it. That may or may not take into account what the Minister has already approved, either in the immediately proximate areas of the city or elsewhere, and whether that has any impact on what we should be arguing for. I'm not suggesting that we should simply move where ministers move, but we should be cognizant of what they have approved and the likelihood that they will be consistent in the future. And so what would be more helpful for me would be if I'm being asked to approve this, even though the delegates' report has some misgivings, what is it that tells the management that this is one that we should approve? If this is one where, look, we have concerns about it, but we recognise the Minister has already approved like buildings, and that's what we're going to consider at 6.6, I'd like some consideration of what that means in terms of the city's highest priorities for objection to it. Not ones that the Minister has already dismissed. Put a line in the sand, if you will, but understand that the Minister's probably moved past that, and I don't want our concerns to be dismissed. This one, to me, seems to fall in the middle. It's as if we're sort of half approaching it, saying, we kind of like to get to yes, but we're not there yet. And I think when that's the case, when we can possibly say, well, this does satisfy the majority concerns and priorities of the city, notwithstanding some that we're not keen about, it is better to be able to recommend to the Minister that we do approve it. I would hope that in the period between now and then, we could identify those priorities for the city, we could work with the developer, and we could get to the point where we could say, as we did with 6.1, despite some other misgivings, we've got to the point where we can approve this. If we can't, so be it. But I don't feel either on this one, or to be honest, in a future one on 6.6, that I have that guidance from the officers for me to be able to make a clear-cut decision and therefore to take up Lawrence's suggestion that we do consult further before we make a final decision, I think is a good one.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Would any other councillors like to speak to the motion? Yes, Councillor Leppard.
Look, I'm on the fence, Chair. I think that there could be some good coming out of a deferral, but I didn't have in mind that it would be so that we can do some more work to see what conditions might be placed on a tentative approval. I think that the recommendation from management could be worded better, and I certainly wasn't in a position to agree to that tonight. However, I do agree entirely with the conclusion to the delegate report, which for various reasons, various overwhelming reasons, the only logical assessment of this application is that an objection should be lodged. I take up the point about keeping our hat in the ring, or whatever the analogy was. Lodging an objection on heritage grounds allows the City of Melbourne to continue negotiations, because the potential to remove an objection and the potential to invite further reviews of the application is much stronger when the City is in that process after it has lodged an objection. And so to lodge an objection does keep the City of Melbourne's hat in the ring. Again, I apologise if that wasn't the analogy that was used. But there are so many aspects of this particular application that I was very prepared to support the conclusion to the delegate report tonight. Over the course of the next 2 weeks, if this deferral is supported, and I suppose on balance I'm probably happy to support it, but as I said, I'm on the fence, happy either way, that over the next 2 weeks, perhaps we can spend some time seeing if we can come up with a more effective resolution, but I can't envisage that being a tentative support. All that said, so be it. It'll still be resolved by the end of the year. Let's not try and have too many bites of the cherry, though.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert. Councillor Meehan, you'd like to speak.
Yes, I think the North Melbourne proposal that was mentioned earlier, we took three goes to deal with. We had two deferrals there. I guess the difference this time is that the deferral to December 17 will be in a council meeting where there won't be any presentations or any public involvement. It's just a straight vote. I guess I'm a bit concerned that we're sweating every last paragraph of this when we're not the responsible authority. Ultimately, it's just the minister who will be making the decision. But Councillor Leppert's point about the heritage and the third-party appeal rights that the heritage brings to this for us makes this a little different. It's not just a letter. We may have a process going forward. Also a little bit concerned that the proposal has come in at just over the 25,000 square metres at which the Minister's authority kicks in and our authority kicks out. I just note that that does seem to happen a bit around town, and obviously it's a very tall building on a very small site. It's 100 metres taller than the Phoenix, and would hope to think that the system's not being run in a way that aims to not have City of Melbourne as the responsible authority. If some changes can be made, always we'll look at what the officers say and what the applicant says on the day. So look forward to seeing if anything can come forward on December 17. But whilst always interested in, you know, innovative architecture, I have to say that the concerns expressed in the report are fairly strong on a range of fronts, particularly with the setbacks. And I do think we need to not lose sight of those in our enthusiasm to be seen to be supporting innovative proposals.
Thank you, Councillor Meehan. Any other councillors like to speak to this item? If not, I'll close off the discussion. I agree with my fellow councillors and Lord Mayor. And it's true, we are not the authority making the decision, the minister is. It is also true to say that we can debate this, but we have to bear that in mind, that in the end, what we approve in a recommendation to be written back to the department does have an impact, because we have spent the last 2 years developing closer working relationships with the Department of Planning. We meet with them regularly. We try to make sure that our concerns, our requirements and our expectations are actually included. And it's also important to know that I think the last year or so, some of the decisions that's been signed off by the minister is actually quite indicative in terms of how that relationship has improved, in the sense that most of our recommendations, most of our conditions that we put into our submission back to the minister and have been taken up in recent approvals, and where we object to certain things strongly, some of those have been, the minister has basically refused those applications. So I think in terms of council wanting to be in the picture and to be on the table, the work that's been done by the planning department and the officers working with the planning department of the minister has borne fruit in that way, and we'd like to see that continue into the future. And we want that message to be out there too, that all developers, architects, applicants, consultants out there understand this, that the City of Melbourne, who in the end is the custodian of the city, which is the world's most livable city for the last 3 years, have a responsibility to ensure that as we move forward and as the city continues to grow and prosper, we do manage to keep the whole process under control and not let it get out of hand, because then it changes the whole feeling and the outlook of the city. So I do just like to say that
as a closing remark before I put this motion to the vote. All those in favour? I declare this motion carried. Next, we have agenda item 6.3, Ministerial Planning Approval TPM 2013-25, number 121 to 141 at Beckett Street, Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation on this one? Nope. In that case, I'd like to move the recommendation, which should be up on the screen. Is it, should be 8.1 or 9.1? Anyway, you can fix up the numbering. That should be 9. It actually shouldn't be a number there. There shouldn't be a number at all. Just remove the number. And then remove 9.1. Thank you. And I call the councillors to second the motion. Lord Mayor. Thank you. Once again, thank officers for the work on this. The report's quite clear. This is a much bigger site, and it's done a design that complies with the setback requirements, and it's working with officers. It's got a good outcome, and that's why the officers have recommended support of this, and I concur fully. So I'm not going to say too much more because we've got more complicated ones to deal with shortly. So I'll pass on to the seconder, Lord Mayor.
I also support it, but I point out this is a matter of degree, not principle. I mean, again, we have objected to the setbacks here. Only on one facade, it's true, to the Beckett Street. Again, this is a very tall building. I mean, the previous one where we had misgivings was 52 storeys. This is 63. You know, so the point I want to make is, again, that while I support this, And it is a very elegant solution, and there's no doubt about that architecturally. It is also an innovative solution, particularly at ground level. But nevertheless, we're arguing for, it might seem like a small amount, a metre and a half of setback, but councillors will recall the arguments at Freshwater Place about such distances as a metre and a half in setbacks. So while this one is a recommendation that we send a letter approving it, that in fact, although different in degree, they are not different in principle from some of the other arguments or in volume. And therefore, I think we do need to understand the gradations that result in either us objecting or approving with conditions. But nevertheless, I think that this is a good outcome and a particularly elegant architectural form, and I'm happy to support the recommendation.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Any other councillors like to speak to this? Yes, Councillor Mayne.
The Lord Mayor's right. This one's actually 45,000 square metres, so this is the biggest one of the night. We've got six. It was 3-3 on the papers, 3-4, 3 against. We've supported one, we've deferred one, we're supporting this one, and I agree with the Lord Mayor that it is a good solution for this particular site. And there's a lot of decisions for the Minister to make, and hopefully this is one he'll get right.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. Councillor Leppard, you'd like to say a few words?
I'm not sure that the for and against count is a planning consideration on a planning agenda, but I support this recommendation as well. I think that the setback issue is relatively minor compared to the previous application, and on the whole, this is quite an exciting application. It is just over 200 metres tall, and I still support it. There you go, Councillor Mayne. The activation of the ground floor is a particularly innovative design. It's something that we should be encouraging and enthusing, and obviously we've worked very closely with the developer to get that particular outcome. I think it's a very exciting outcome, and I thank everyone involved, particularly officers who have done a lot of work in the pre-application stage and in the negotiations to get to this point.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. Any other councillors like to speak to this? If not, I'll just quickly close off.
Really?
Go ahead.
All right. Good report from officers. I put this to the vote. All those in favour?
Outstanding conclusion. Outstanding concluding remarks.
Thank you. I declare the motion passed. We go to the next one, which is item 6.4, Ministerial Planning Approval 2013-17, the Dallas Brooks Centre at 282 to 336 Victoria Parade and 300 Albert Street. I'll call on Mr. Williams to do a quick presentation on this.
We've had this forum.
This. Just, if you could, Mr. Williams, focus on the before, earlier presentations and what's been put up. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This site is to the immediate north of the Fitzroy Gardens. It's a very large site, about 8,300 square metres. The existing Dallas Brooks Hall sits on it. There's an open car park on through the Victoria Parade frontage. And the Dallas Brooks Hall, which was constructed in 1969, has National Trust recognition, but not ours.
Mr. Williams, could you bring the mic closer to you so we can hear you?
Yes, is that effective? Right, thank you. This is a split shot looking at the proposal, or the existing conditions rather, from two different directions. This is, as it appears, from the adjacent municipality, looking across Victoria Parade to the Fitzroy Gardens. In the gardens here, this is the main entrance to the gardens, is a statue with a fountain with a scarab, a statue in the middle of it, the river god, which is a registered object in its own right. And looking from the south, this is the existing Dallas Brooks Hall. The height of the hall along here is 19 metres, which I'll come back to shortly. There are numerous other heritage-graded buildings along Albert Street and more along the Victoria Parade frontage and to the west along Victoria Parade as well. The previous proposal, which the Chair refers to, was submitted to the Councillor Forum in March. This is it, and as you can see, it's substantially lower here and less in bulk there than is now proposed. This is what the current development looks like, and I won't go through the wording here, but these are the planning controls. This is the site which has slipped down the road, and so that should be over here. There is a design and development overlay onto Victoria Parade, which recommends a maximum height of 30 metres, and there's a much more difficult one to administer from the south, which says that there should be a 22-degree plane starting on the southern side of Albert Street and going up, which is this line here, above which no new building should be constructed. Now, this was a planning control which was introduced in the 1970s, as far as we can tell. It goes back even further than me. And the intention was to hold the level of overshadowing, especially to the Fitzroy Gardens, to what was already being cast by office buildings constructed by the state government farther west along Victoria Parade. There was an exemption allowed so that you could nestle in behind the shadows of those existing buildings, but if you didn't have a taller building to the north of you, then 22 degrees was the upper limit. And that's a very low level. The altitude of the sun on the 22nd of June is 28 degrees. This is below that. So it's quite a severe restriction on the development potential of the site. The existing Dallas Brooks Hall has that edge I mentioned, this elevation at about 19 metres. That means that if you draw a line from the reference point here over the top of the parapet of the Dallas Brooks Hall, the angle is 27 degrees. If this development on Victoria Parade were to be approved, the angle goes up to about 35 degrees. That's what's now proposed. That's 19. This is 19, 28, 39, and that's 51 metres with a plant room on the top. That's facing Victoria Parade. That's the proposed Victoria Parade elevation. These ground floor layouts show a large open area here, which was not suggested by our department at all, but has been done to create amenity for the surrounding residential units, which would have outlook across the open space to the gardens in both directions. To the immediate north here is the Epworth Freemasons Hospital, which has sent two councillors a long objection to this application, and I'll get to that shortly. That's level two. And at level six, the proposed development is already above the Epworth Hospital. Now we have here a cross-section with the hospital here and the proposal there. The existing Dallas Brooks Hall has a wall that's 10 metres away from the hospital, and the blaze of the very large columns outside the existing building are 6 metres away from Epworth. The proposal is that the nearest point of the new building would be 6 metres and the farthest away would be 9. So there's a slight reduction in the distance between the two buildings and the elevation that's seen from the hospital now is of a blank wall. What's proposed is that there will be residential windows there. The streetscapes indicate the scale of the building relative to the surrounding buildings. It's substantially higher and substantially bigger in bulk than any of its neighbours. This is Albert Street, and these are the office buildings that I mentioned before. To Victoria Parade, the taller buildings are to the west, towards the central city, and the proposal is here. That's Epworth as it now exists. Shadow diagrams, the applicant shadow diagrams for winter, the next one, show overshadowing of the northern part of the Fitzroy Gardens. Our own 3D model, which you might recall from the Tower D exercise in Docklands, is under review. It's been found that there's a half a degree difference under some circumstances between our model and some others. The technical reason for that is still being explored, so we haven't shown you 3D models of our own for the time being until we can confirm its accuracy, but we expect that it's going to show slightly more overshadowing of Fitzroy Gardens and the applicants.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Any questions for Mr. Martin? No, thank you. You may take a seat. Mr. Williams, I mean. Now call on David. First of all, I call on Peter Shelley from Freemasons Victoria, who requested opportunity to address the committee. Thank you. Peter, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Peter Shelley, representing Freemasons Victoria, we're the applicant. Freemasons have been an integral part of Victoria for more than 175 years. We've created some of the significant institutions in the state, the Freemasons Hospital and the Royal Freemasons Homes, to name but a few. In more recent times, over the last 3 years, we've contributed over $6 million to charitable, benevolent and education causes, and have provided ongoing manpower to assist in recovery after the Black Saturday bushfires. We've enjoyed a significant presence for 125 years in the City of Melbourne, firstly in Swanston Street, then 25 Collins Street, now Collins Place, and since 1969 in East Melbourne. Dallas Brooks was built at a time when there were well over 100,000 Freemasons. Our numbers are now more modest, 13,500, thus our needs have changed significantly. In 1969, when we built Dallas Brooks, it was a venue of choice. That is no longer the case, and the ongoing maintenance of a building of the 60s represents a very large liability to the organisation, a liability that hinders our ability to increase and extend our community activities. Freemasons Victoria has decided that to be an effective contributor in the future, we need to realise our non-productive assets and use those proceeds to continue to grow better men and a stronger community. Part of our strategic plan is to improve our meeting places to meet current standards and expectations. We're doing this across the state. This project is a cornerstone in the reinvigoration of Freemasons Victoria. From an extended consultation process with our membership, it was determined that we must maintain a significant presence in East Melbourne. The support from our membership for this was overwhelming. We went through an exhaustive process with Mervac over a period of 18 months and chose Mervac and Bates Smart as our project partners, with an aim to create a project that met the principles of Freemasonry, just, upright, honest, with integrity, must have ability to do for us to do more in the community, must be truthful and respectful to the community in which it will be located. We believe the design does all of these things. As part of our commitment to consultation, we've met with the East Melbourne Group on two occasions, Epworth Hospital on multiple occasions, and continue to meet with stakeholders to improve outcomes. So to date, we've received only 7 objections to what you would consider as a fairly substantial application. The building, whilst large, is incredibly nuanced as it responds to our neighbours and it requires careful study. The pictures up here really don't do it justice how much effort's gone into responding to individual circumstances. To note is that the proposed building is set back from the hospital at distances greater than that was agreed in the original contract of sale when we sold the project to ING. Oh, sorry, the hospital to ING. We've been active participants in the design process to date, mainly because the outcomes will be incredibly important to us, because whilst Batesmart and Mervac will move on, we will be living there in the future because it will be our home. We seek your support.
Thank you. Any questions for Mrs. Shelley? I have a question for you. You mentioned about the presentation that was done by Mr. Williams, and the images are actually the images from the application themselves. And I guess the question is from the original one that was presented to council in March. What was the reason for the changes?
We were working through a number of discussions, both with council but primarily with the department, to respond to issues relating to setback in various places. There was some concerns about some of the impacts on Victoria Parade. So you saw one of the images which actually had the building pushed back off Victoria Parade. And we've been continuing to work in localised spots and improve the articulation in the Ede Street frontage. So there's a number of areas that we've been working really closely with a variety of stakeholders where we have the ability to engage with them. And we continue to commit to do that. We have ongoing meetings still with Epworth Hospital to continue to discuss our differences, because at the end of the day, as I described there, Freemasons is going to continue to have a presence here, and we very much want to be friends with our neighbours. They very much utilise the Freemasons brand on their hospital, and we're incredibly proud of what they do with that, and we look forward to an ongoing relationship with them. At the moment, though, we have to work as neighbours to try and resolve some of the issues.
The second question I have, in the actual application that come through, and the pictures from the applicant show overshadowing of Fitzroy Gardens. Wasn't that a concern to you? Because it's definitely a concern to us.
Right through the process, the impact on Fitzroy Gardens was very, very important. The primary focus has been on the periods for under the planning requirements, which is the September solstice, when you look at it from that perspective. So we've worked on those particular planning requirements. We've obviously responded when requests have been made to provide information with regard to the winter solstice as well. We believe there's a balance that needs to be struck in there. The shadows from the buildings are actually less during the other periods of the year as a result of this application, because as was described in there, the monolithic type of what Dallas Brooks is at the moment, its scale, its height and the plane that it is on, generates quite significant shadows. And the articulation and variability of the proposal certainly breaks up those shadows, and in many instances are actually reduced. Yes, I accept completely that there's some impact in the middle of June, but we actually believe that overall the balance works to achieve a more nuanced response, if you like. And whilst you can pick a particular day when it may well be slightly worse, we think overall it's a better outcome.
Thank you for that. You may take a seat.
Thank you.
Just before that, Councillor Mann has one question.
Where does the I'll just ask it. You can say it's inappropriate if you like. Where does the authority lie to reduce the scale or make changes? Is it with the Freemasons or is it with Mervac in terms of your internal arrangements?
We have an equitable relationship between the two of us, so all of the outcomes are shared, negotiated with between us. So I wouldn't put either one of us in the front of the driving seat in that regard. It's a cooperative approach.
Because it's just surprising to see your neighbour going in so hard, and obviously our officers are taking a pretty strong stance. I'm just trying to get a sense as to why the 64,000 square metre proposal, which is clearly very, very large for the site, one of the 20 biggest developments in Melbourne. It's a huge development. What's driving that? Because it just seems to be over the top.
We certainly wouldn't concede that it's over the top. We think it's a very large site. There's not many sites in Melbourne of 8,000 square metres this close to the centre of the city. And we're looking at 180 metres sitting on a property 11 metres wide. We're 8,000 square metres. So I think you need to look at it in that sort of context, Councillor. We don't believe that the response is over the top in that context. With our next-door neighbour, we've been working on an ongoing position. It's fair to say that they have some concerns about the relationship with the building to the hospital. In the original contract of sale between the two, there is a number of light and air easements and those sorts of things which created space between the buildings. We're certainly of the view in response that that Bates Smart have generated that we satisfied not only the absolute intent but the full integrity of those particular setbacks. But we're continuing to try and engage with Epworth Hospital with regard to that to make sure that that's an outcome that they can be happy with as well. As we have to be neighbours for a long time.
Thank you. Mr. Shealy, you may take a seat. You may sit down. Next, I call on David Passarella from Gaydon's Lawyers. And David, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors. I'll make this presentation on behalf of Epworth, and as you know, we're adjacent to the site and we have interfaces both on the southern and western boundaries of our site. A little bit about Epworth. We're the largest non-for-profit private hospital in Victoria. We've currently got about 8 sites around inner and eastern Melbourne and growing. This particular site is an important site for Epworth. It has oncology, day surgery and a leading maternity hospital. Why we have concerns with the proposal? Well, placing aside the heritage issues and the concessions made by the applicant's own heritage advisor that it concedes that it's an A or B grade building, which ought to be retained, and some other issues about in keeping with the heritage area, the proposal has significant issues with respect that it needs to overcome with respect to built form, and it's clearly, in our opinion, an overly ambitious proposal. It fails to take into account the hospital and the interface issues, and that's the most concerning part for the hospital. If I can just turn to some of the issues that we have. Firstly, it's a setback on the southern interface with our building. The setbacks are quite minimal. They range, but they go as low as 5 metres on the ground level, and that's clearly unacceptable and too close. That with an overly high, tall building, and I won't go through the height controls which this proposal is highly in exceedance of, it brings about a very close building and a very tall building to the hospital. That in turn brings about some privacy and amenity issues. Those windows on the southern boundary fronting onto the proposal are sensitive rooms that are used for daycare procedures, suites, maternity, very sensitive uses, chemotherapy, all which have windows that front onto that side. It's clearly, while they've made some effort to try to attempt it by screening, we think it doesn't go far enough. There's issues about shared loading bay and ambulance accesses. We say it fails to take into account the acoustic issues coming out of the hospital, and as an agent of change, they should have regard to those issues. There's no work being done in terms of how the proposal will deal with loading and reversing vehicles, ambulance noises and generators and other hospital equipment on the site. So it's clear to us that the proposal is one that it's an overdevelopment of the site and one which the hospital is not in a position to accept, and we say it's unacceptable, and we support the council's recommendation to object to the proposal. Thank you.
Any councillors have a question for Mr. Passarella? I have just one quick question. The letter of objection that was sent to council yesterday was a similar letter of objection sent to the department during the discussions of this early stages of this project? When the project has been discussed with the Freemasons and Mirbeck, did Epworth Hospital raise objections with them?
My instructions are that the consultation process that occurred was not extensive. We would have liked to have had more consultation with the developers, and that's the remarks that I've, my instructions that I've received.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
On that note, I'll move to notice the motion that's up on the board. I call on the councillor to second that motion. Councillor Mayne, yes. I think we've heard from both sides on this, and there's also a couple of interesting points in here that the information regarding Epworth Hospitals and its issues just only came to light to council only in the last 48 hours, which surprises us when planning officers advised me that we have not been advised that there was or there were concerns or objections raised by the Epworth Hospital. When information was received from the Department of Planning and when it was referred to us. And that itself is a concern, is that if we as the referral agency and trying to analyse applications, but we don't get all the information that we can work with and understand impacts on neighbours, it is actually very difficult for us to make recommendations back to the department and to the minister in an objective form, because we're only working with part information. So I think that itself is a concern. The other concern, of course, is that when the original proposal was brought into council forum back in March, and the concept plan and the scheme was presented in its form, which was much more low scale, I have a feeling that, you know, generally we thought, no, it's a good idea to redevelop this, and the scale was about right. But what's concerning is that since then it's come in through the Department of Planning and then into the City of Melbourne. There has been quite a few changes and the height increases, which I guess surprised a lot of us. When I looked at it in the detail and reading the report, I can understand why officers have come to that conclusion. There are a lot of issues on this big site. It is a big site, 8,000 square metres. You can design buildings on 8,000 square metres in many different ways. And from what we have seen, that this is probably not the way we would like it to see. So I'm happy to say that now we object to this, and then and hope that the minister takes it on board and then put some pressure on a better outcome. Councillor May?
I agree. I think this is the clearest decision of the night. It has been supercharged since it was presented to councillors. There's a shopping list of concerns, be it heritage, height, the overall bulk, and then obviously the piece de resistance is the very large neighbour which carries the name going in off the long run. So it's a very unusual situation, and I'm frankly surprised it's come forward in this form without some of these issues being sorted and needing to be battered away in such an emphatic way by the officers. Very surprised there's only 7 objections. I don't know if the East Melbourne Group, which version they saw when they were briefed, but clearly this is a substantial overdevelopment of the site, and I'd urge the applicant to reconsider and come back with something more appropriate.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. Would any other councillors like to speak to this? If not, I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour? I declare the motion carried unanimously. Next item on the agenda, which is 6.5. It's Amendment C226, Incorporated Document ID 2013-2. The Australian Broadcasting Commission Corporation, Melbourne, 120 to 130 South Bank Boulevard and 102 to 118 Third Street South Bank. Would officers like a presentation on this? We've actually had ABC present to us only a few weeks ago, so Nope. I now call on Meredith Withers to address the committee. Meredith, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you very much. My name is Meredith Withers. I'm the planning consultant who's been engaged by the ABC. I have with me this evening Mr. Raymond Moore, who is the project director from the ABC, and he's very happy to answer any questions that the councillors may pose as part of their consideration of the proposal that's before you. We would like to, just for the public record, acknowledge the contribution that the councillors have made to this project, and particularly the officers of the City of Melbourne. We've worked in a collaborative and a cooperative way, I think, to actually achieve a better outcome for this project than what we started with. There are some conditions that have been recommended that will suggest some further design improvements, and the ABC is very happy to embrace those. So really, that's the message that we'd like to convey this evening. And, of course, I'm hoping that the councillors will support the officer's recommendation and that there are no surprises for us. But nonetheless, we're here to answer any questions that may assist the council with their assessment of this proposal. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Meredith. Any questions? No, you can sit. You can take a seat. Next... I'd like to call David Pendleton from the ABC to address the committee. Oh.
Perhaps could I just clarify that Mr. Pendleton is actually in Sydney. He's Sydney-based. Okay. So we do have, as a worthy substitute, Mr. Moore, who is here this evening, and he'd be very happy to answer any questions in the place of David Pendleton.
Thank you, Meredith. Any questions for... No, in that case, that's fine. I'll move the motion, the amended motion for this item. It's up on the screen. It's pretty much the same as the item 6.1 by taking the officer's recommendation and adding in the component of the C208. I call on the councillor to second the motion. Councillor Leppard. I think this has been dealt with for quite a while. We've had presentations from ABC, and we've asked the questions, and the proposal looks satisfactory, and our officers are quite happy with it, with a few recommendations on improvements. And because, as I said before, that the C208 development contribution amendment is out there, it's going through the process, but we expect it to... it's fully understood by all parties out there, and therefore we make a consistent approach to all new developments within those growth areas for the developer contribution, and this is consistent with that. Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Chair. Loath though I am ever to encourage the Minister to just change the planning scheme and exempt himself from any notice requirements, I think there are a few exceptions that we can make here to make this slightly unusual move. I confess I still don't fully understand the full rationale for this process being taken as opposed to others. However, the end result is a good one, and so I support it in this at this time. The officers have worked quite closely with those who are working on the development, and I think it's a better outcome than it otherwise would have been. And quite separately to that, there's been an extensive consultation process run by the ABC with various consultants to gather the feedback of those around them. Now, that's outside the usual parameters of what we do in the planning scheme and the usual processes. However, it appears to me at this time that the outcome is an extremely good one, so I commend it. I think it's appropriate that we do put C208 provisions up there, and if the Minister chooses to take that on board or not is up to him. We will leave that with him now. However, I think it's good that we do that as a matter of course from here on in and be consistent. As I said, if the Minister chooses not to take that on board, that is up to him. However, I think it's the right thing to do.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. Any other councillors like to speak to the motion? Councillor Mean.
Yes, I'd like to commend the Abbott government for their vision in building and growing, growing our ABC. And equally, the Napthine government in getting on board a process to fast-track a $100 million-plus investment into the ABC. It's a very important cultural institution for Melbourne. This will be a very important addition to the South Bank Arts Precinct, and it's terrific that there is, in all seriousness, bipartisan support out of Canberra for this process, which hasn't wavered a moment since the recent election. So I think it's fair to say that Auntie has had a little bit of a rails run in a planning process point of view, and I support Councillor Leppard's views that on this occasion we're happy to see a rails run, but we do think that the modest developer contribution, certainly very modest to what an applicant like this would be paying in Sydney or Brisbane, is appropriate in this instance. I've heard numbers bandied around here about ratepayers investing potentially $10 million in the South Bank Arts Precinct over the next decade, and a little bit of a contribution from the ABC, one of the major tenants within the precinct, I think would be wholly appropriate in the circumstances.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. I hope that we can all comment on these motions and try to focus on the planning components. All right, on that note, I would put this to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I declare the motion carried unanimously. Right. What do you have next? Item 6.6. Ministerial Planning Referral TPM 2013-16, number 398 to 406 Elizabeth Street. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? If not, now call on Kelly Burns from SJB Planning. Is that Kelly?
Thank you, councillors. Kel Twyde of SJB Planning.
Yes, Kel. Yes.
Kel instead of Kelly. Councillor, thank you for the opportunity to present to the committee tonight. Our client is the developer of the My 80 residential building under construction at 410 Elizabeth Street, which is on the adjacent corner of Elizabeth and Beckett Street. And this building's design in our submission is representative of our client's commitment to the regeneration of the CBD's Northwest Precinct, with almost all the apartments sold and with a construction value of $132 million alone, makes a significant contribution to the local economy. In acquiring the subject site, our client saw the opportunity to bookend the southeast corner of the street with a building of equal design merit, which would respond to its context, the site's constraints and opportunities. Both sites are the same size and can accommodate in our submission a similar design response. With the MY80 building comprising a 54-storey tower building, as is proposed on a subject site. In contrast to My80, the subject site offers a significant contribution to create a through-block link from Literature Lane to the southeast along the eastern site boundary through to Beckett Street. There's no statutory planning requirement to provide this link, but the design team considers it a great outcome for the city and one that should be pursued. The proposed building is being very carefully and conscientiously designed in the round so that each facade and elevation is articulated. There are no borrowed light apartments in any of the 465 apartments on offer, and only a small number of south-facing apartments, in the order of two out of 11 per floor. It achieves an ESD best practice accreditation under the Green Star rating with 4 stars and contributes 1,000 odd square metres of retail floor space and 400 odd metres of office space in addition to the apartments. The design team has very actively pursued activation to Elizabeth Street and the Beckett Streets with a double height glazed facade, providing active retail use on street frontages, a canopy to both street frontages, and very careful consideration of the car park podium and above and its activation. Councillors, it's fair to say that the officer report before you has identified a number of issues that officers have with, I suppose, setbacks of the tower primarily as opposed to height. Respectfully, we disagree with officers insofar as a setback to the north is concerned and suggest that a corner site such as this, particularly in the context of other similarly scaled buildings, can be accommodated on the street. To the south, the building is set back 5 metres from its southern boundary, and on our analysis and the project team's analysis, a similar setback on the site to the south will achieve a 10-metre tower separation if that's developed. That site also benefits from 3 street frontages, and we think the logical outcome is a tower on that site that orients to the east, the west and the south and presents essentially a blank facade to the north. To the east, the building is set back, proposed at 2.2 metres, and we understand officer concerns regarding tower separation to the east, And we've suggested, and we again suggest to the committee, that if you're of the mind to support the proposal, you could resolve that by way of an either-or permit condition, being a permit condition that either required a setback of 5 metres from the east or the acquisition of air rights over the Theosophical Building, which is a heritage-graded building to the east. So, officers, we commend the proposal for you and respectfully suggest that you support it. Thank you, councillors.
Any questions for Kel? Yes, Councillor Leppert.
You talk about the tower at multiple facades and the good design outcomes that are there. However, the application suggests that levels 2 to 8 are just car parking, and so we're looking at great big blank walls, or it's not that. How does that contribute to a good design outcome?
Thank you, Councillor. Activation of podiums is something that the project architect, my firm, is very cognizant of in City of Melbourne, South Bank and the like. What this proposal does is looks to deal with that. Yes, it's got podium car parking, but we've looked to activate that podium car parking above a double height volume, which is an express double height, so it's almost 9 metres tall from memory, and then there's pods of activation at various points in that car park podium. So there are various active floor spaces intended to be office space in this proposal that are at various points randomly scattered throughout that car parking podium. So it's not just a blank scun car park, but it has activation of floor space scattered throughout it in different locations at different levels.
Any other questions? Thank you for that. Yeah, you may take a seat. Okay, I'd like to move a motion which is not that one, but that one. Again, I call a councillor second that motion. Yes, Lord Mayor second. I'll quickly just say this, that with this particular one, there has been discussions with the developer and the applicant. There are issues that are still outstanding. At this point in time, the officer's report, the delegate's report indicate, you know, we say no to this, but we know that in some of the correspondence that there's issues to be ironed out. 2 more weeks before the end of the year, I highly recommend the applicant to work further with officers on this, because if we go strongly back to the minister and say, no, we are not going to support this, unless certain conditions are in there, and it's best to make sure the developers and its consultants and architects understand where we're coming from. It could ignore us, and the fact that some buildings in the past, some developments have been approved in the past by this minister and previous ministers, it doesn't always mean that we've achieved good outcomes, because we do know that this city will continue to grow. There'll be a lot more buildings. In some respects, we are now more concerned about how the buildings relate to each other, relate to the street, how it works and activates at the ground level, how it actually works in the whole streetscape in terms of other buildings and the wind effects, as well as whether it looks directly into each other. And it's not really the height that's the major concern now, because height is taken as granted that's going to happen in some parts of the city. And I'd like to state this very strongly. The council's interworking with the department and with the ministerial office is such that where we disagree, we will go to war on this. So I recommend carefully to the developer, use this opportunity to reach an outcome, or we'll be very strong in our position. Back to the minister. Lord Mayor.
We may be, councillor, depending on a council decision at the time, I would point out. This is the pigeon pair to 6.2, only it sort of leans slightly more towards the negative. Our officers are in a difficult position here, and I'm not quite sure how to resolve it, and I think we need to talk about that internally. When I look at the delegates' report, the first 3 points are entirely consistent with the way delegates' reports are presented to us. However, what they don't take cognizance of is that the minister has already made a decision for the pigeon pair of this building by the same developer on the opposite corner. So he's already made a decision about a building being flush to the street. Now, it's probably quite appropriate for our planners to say once again, well, we don't agree with that. But nevertheless, we've got a precedent for the same developer exactly across the street in the recent past. So the difficulty for us is, to what extent, again, do we put a line in the sand and say we don't like these sort of developments? But having said that, if the minister is going to approve this, as indeed he did with the other one, here are the things of highest priority to us that we would like to see included in the conditions. Because I don't think a minister is going to go back to first principles with this one. And I'm not even sure that I would want that. Even if I disagreed with the first decision, the fact that it is made and now being built means that if we continue to argue this way and the results are some yes, some no, then we may well get a streetscape which is extremely irregular and not pleasing at all. So we've got to actually look at what's been approved and what these additions are. So that's not a criticism of our planners. They have to begin from the principles that they have. Having said that, though, if I don't see that as my highest priority, it's not because I disagree with the planners. It's because the minister's already made a call recently on the other corner. Therefore, my priorities would be about some of the things about which I am concerned. I don't like that cantilever, you know, on the building. It does go into airspace that I think is inappropriate and uses up, you know, I think airspace quite inappropriately for this building, notwithstanding it's within the envelope. I think that is something where, you know, if that were to come back and be compromised, I would be much more keen to sort of pass this through. It does need to relate to the other sites, as Councillor Ong said. I don't think this one does yet, but we've got to understand what is around it and what's likely to happen in nearby developments. So my perspective on this one is the same on 6.2. I'd need a lot more work from the developer from our officers, and from our officers I would like to have some briefing and cognizance of what's already been decided and therefore what are their highest priorities to achieve in a reasonable manner. I thought that's what they did have a stab at in the recommendation that was put before us in 6.2, which we subsequently removed to defer 6.2. So if they're able to have a go at it in 6.2, I don't see why they are not able to have a go at it in 6.6. It should be a consistent template that we are applying. And in this instance, my view it would run something along those lines. Here is our preference, that the minister not to X, Y, and Z. But if the minister is determined to approve this, here are the conditions that are most important to us, and please have regard to the delegate's report. I think that takes cognizance both of our planning rules, but also what the minister has already determined, and I hope that's what we see both from our officers, and I hope we see considerable compromise from the developer before this is put before us again on the 17th of December.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Any other councillors like to speak to this? Councillor Leppard.
I agree with the last points that have just been made about taking the extra time to make sure that the resolution that we do end up with is the most effective one that we can choose. And so with that in mind, I'm happy to support the deferral. I want to put aside any suggestion that it's because I'm thinking about going wildly against what the conclusion to the delegate report is, which again is a very strongly worded, reasonably unambiguous objection on a series of grounds, which make abundant sense to me. The Lord Mayor's talked about the airspace issue. I think the issue I mentioned during the questions about levels 2 to 8 being car parks and the lack of any five-star green rating things that we should be very, very concerned about. So, again, I can't envisage this being anything other than an objection. However, we can investigate more effective ways of wielding whatever influence we may have as an objector, as an advisor to the minister, to prioritise what those other items might be. So I'd look forward to that debate, and on the grounds that we're not deciding anything tonight, I think the deferral's probably fine as long as we get it over with by the end of the year.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. Councillor Main, you'd like to say something?
Yes, I was interested in Kel's comment about the sister tower having completely sold out. And I remember one of the planners, senior people up at Spring Street, commenting that the Lonsdale, Beckett, Elizabeth Street precincts is actually delivering the most affordable housing in Melbourne at the moment. And when the land bubble out in the suburbs and throw in commuting costs and petrol costs, and you can see the economic drivers of these proposals in these precincts. So at one level, I think it's unfair if we start trying to impose fancy architecture, fancy podiums, innovative design, when you understand, you know, the market pitch and the pricing and what else is being developed in this area. But we have to hold the line on good design, and clearly, certainly the setback, which offends that sort of first mover advantage principle, where if you happen to put up the first tower, then the adjacent site to the east, you get that freshwater place sort of argument that you'll have two towers very, very close together within appropriate setbacks just because someone's approved the first tower to go first. So when that first tower is proposed, that's where the authorities need to draw the line. That's what the officers have pointed out. That's what we need to point out to the minister. And I think it's also fair to say that the minister may have approved the sister tower in an environment where our opinions were less visible. And our opinions now, whether we are dealing with all ministerials in open session like that with open reports, I think he's giving them a level of credibility and elevation that may have not been taken into consideration as much by the minister when the sister tower was approved. Maybe the political environment is changing. There's been more public debate about the fact that Melbourne's already got the largest skyscrapers in Australia, and the permits issued will fundamentally also dramatically increase that. There's more public discussion about that, so I think the minister is taking our professional officer's opinion into consideration more than perhaps he was earlier in his term as the planning minister. That's a good thing. We respect that. We like that. And we hope that the minister will do it again in this one, irrespective of what precedent he set with the sister tower. We've always got to apply good planning. And I think that this probably would have been more appropriate just to say, we accept what the officers are saying, off she goes. But like with the earlier one, if it comes back, if we get some concessions, fine, that would be good, would encourage that, and we'll see what comes back on the 17th. But I certainly agree with Councillor Leppert that there are significant concerns, and I'd need to see some substantial change before giving this one a tick.
Thank you, Councillor Main. On that note, while we can debate this further, I'll just best to actually move to the vote. I'll put this to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. Thank you. I declare that motion carried unanimously. Next item, agenda item 6.7, it's report on City of Melbourne submission on Plan Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? In that case, no. I call on councillor to move the motion. Yes, Councillor Leppert, you'd like to move
the
motion?
I'd like to have a slightly different motion, and I believe it will be up there. There we go. That's the motion I move. Moved and seconded by the Chair.
Yes. Mover, you'd like to speak to this?
Look, just briefly, because it is getting quite late, and that is a pity in a way, because this is a hugely important strategic document that the State Government's put out. This is the second of the consultation phases that we're now dealing with, and the amount of work that's gone into the City of Melbourne's response to this important strategic document is large and should be commended. I'm very impressed with the recommendations that are made throughout that document. Perhaps because we've got other things going on, like, you know, the CIS to the East-West Link, the community is less engaged with this document than they otherwise might have been. I've heard a lot of comment about this, but perhaps fewer submissions than I expected. That's unfortunate. However, the end result, again, is quite good. Now's not the time to go into too much detail because it is too late. As I said, that is unfortunate, but just two things I did want to highlight. One, I think the recommendations made by the officers to prioritise the status of Mooney Ponds Creek and the need to have proper planning for source to mouth for Mooney Ponds Creek and the governance structure there is a very good one, and I thank the officers for that particular piece of work. The second piece of work is that there is a recommendation, recommendation 10 in fact, that suggests that the starting point for construction of the Metro Tunnel be pulled forward to the short term, and by short term I think we mean 2013 to 17. That's how the Plan Melbourne defines it. However, we don't in that recommendation also say that the completion of the Melbourne Metro project should be done in the medium term. We just leave it in the long term, which is any time up until 2050. So just to reiterate the importance with which the City of Melbourne places on the construction of Melbourne Metro as a hugely important strategic project in our municipality, I think that we should make that one small tweak. Hopefully it's uncontroversial. The second part is taking on board recommendations from officers. People will notice that it is slightly different to the original recommendation, but that is because there have been discussions in the meantime. Again, I think it's reasonably uncontroversial. It's a pity we didn't have time to go into this into more detail, but thank you again to the officers for excellent work.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. As a seconder, I'll just quickly say a couple of things. That the officers done a tremendous job because with so many different priorities and in, within these areas and the strategic issues that Councillor Leppard's mentioned before, the point by point addressing of issues within Plan Melbourne, it's actually a very good outcome. And also, I guess, it's also an endorsement officer's work through the last 3 years on the MSS, because many of those strategies in the MSS have been picked up in Plan Melbourne and expanded to be on the City of Melbourne's boundaries. So I think that's a good example of the skills and the knowledge that exist within the City of Melbourne. And I commend that from our officers. Any other councillors like to speak to this? Councillor Main.
Thanks, Councillor Rong. I think page 7, direction 1.4, a plan for the expanded central city to become Australia's largest commercial and residential centre by 2040. When you read that, you sort of think to yourself, well, you know, this is a very fast-growing city at the moment, the fastest-growing city in Australia, a government that's set to facilitate and deliver that growth, and they are proposing to deliver it through this overarching planning document. I agree with Councillor Leppard that I'm surprised there's been less, hasn't been as much community input and debate, and I guess that's probably the factor of the East-West link sort of smothering everything, and as we've seen tonight, dealing with an avalanche of ministerial applications, it's fast and furious in planning and permit issuing and major projects at the moment in the fastest growing city in Australia, and this is the document where the government lays it out as to just how much growth they do envisage coming at the City of Melbourne. And I'll just say that I hope that we've all learnt from the lessons of Docklands that the City of Melbourne's expertise can be utilised in a very meaningful way at Macaulay and Egate and City North and even the Richmond Station corridor through the broader IMAP arrangements, that we can be a serious player in this, and this doesn't become a repeat of Docklands where a state authority comes in and goes wham bam and up she goes, and then later on City of Melbourne is called in to try and do deal with some of the smaller stuff and clean up some of the oversights. So it's big and it's bold. We are effectively on the same page. I think it's a good document, this, and I think we should support it, but it's also be cognizant of the size and the scale of what it allows and the battles and the struggles that will come with the detail of implementing this vision and this new planning authority effectively.
Thank you, Councillor Min. Any other councillors? Yes, Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Councillor Ong. Just briefly, I would also like to commend the officers for their work. You mentioned the amount of applications we're getting in the planning department, but also the amount of work going into other submissions such as the CIS. So to produce such a quality submission is excellent, and it makes our job a lot easier, especially as it clearly aligns with strategies that we've already adopted and endorsed, such as the transport strategy, as well as our structure plans and our work around affordable housing, et cetera. Following on from Councillor Main's point that it is a rapidly growing city that is proposed, or that it already is, and even further in the proposal, it's important to highlight, I think it's in the key issues on the page one of the report, that they have taken on board some of our submission to the MAC in May, that they incorporate the 1200 buildings program across the state, as well as items from our future living housing choices paper. So that's commendable that we've done such work already, and that they've already taken on board in this iteration of the document. So thank you to officers, and I hopefully our recommendations are taken on board, in particular the elevation of climate adaptation as a key priority, because it really should be a key priority. It shouldn't have been requested. It should already been in there.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. Any other comments on this one? If not, the mover would like to close debate at all?
Just briefly, just to make the point, of course, that this doesn't constitute support or otherwise for the document as a whole, and that was sort of alluded to during the introductory remarks that I made. The submission is excellent. I think most of Plan Melbourne is excellent, and some of the points that have been highlighted by councillors today are some of the better points. Not all of it is excellent. However, what we're doing today is endorsing the City of Melbourne's submission to Plan Melbourne. And I just wanted to make that minor clarification.
Thank you. On that note, I put this motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I declare the motion carried unanimously. I now hand this over to Councillor Main to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the finance and governance portfolio.
And I'd like to commend Councillor Ong for a marathon effort tonight in the planning portfolio. Well done, Councillor Ong. And everyone's left now that you're no longer in the chair. Agenda item, this won't take long, no way. Agenda item 6.10 is the Crown Land Regulations, Crown Land Reserves, brackets, King's Domain Regulations 2013. Would councillors like a presentation on this important agenda item?
Second that.
Seconder for that item. Councillor, Deputy Lord Mayor, would Councillor Oak like to speak to the motion?
No, only I support the recommendation, and I enjoyed reading the letters to and from ourselves and the Minister. I think the jargon is quite fascinating to read, but it is obviously something that we should do.
Deputy Lord Mayor? Councillor Ong, you'd like to speak?
Yes, sir. Councillor Main. Certain things that we have to do move at glacial space. It only took 3 years to get to this point.
Councillor Foster, what would you like to say?
That I'm eagerly awaiting the next episode of Keating.
Okay. I believe that starts at 8:30, Councillor Foster, so we'll take
my
that as
point precisely.
You move that the motion be put in light of Councillor Foster's desires. All those in favour? Any against? I declare that item passed unanimously. And the script now says, I now call on Lord Mayor Robert Doyle to resume the role of chair for the remainder of the meeting.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This concludes the reports from management. There is one item of general business, and that is a notice of motion from Councillor Foster on the Queen Street mega taxi rank. And I call on Councillor Foster to move a motion with respect to this matter.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I'll move the motion on the screen. Can we just scroll that down a little? I think there's... Yes, I'll move the motion on the screen.
Is that seconded? Thank you, Councillor Oak.
Actually, can I ask a couple of questions?
Yes, Councillor Oak. Sorry. You can't second it. I'm sorry. You're a director.
Lord Mayor... Jeff Robinson advised me as this meeting was beginning that the Thursday this week is unlikely, but next week definitely.
I'll move that in my potential amendment.
Okay. Thank you. Councillor Oak, do you wish to... Well, I'll call on the mover in a moment if he wishes to delete the Thursday 5th, but you're happy with that? If we just delete, namely, Thursday 5 December and... No. Make from. Yeah. No, just put the word from in there. That's it. Yep. Okay, thank you. Councillor Oak, you wish to ask a couple of questions?
Sorry, only because it's a bit awkward not being able to ask questions beforehand, but I support the intent and it's a good one, but my concern and my questions are actually about where the money is coming from, but also how this fits within the Safe City strategy. So I'm not sure if I should ask Linda or to ask Dean. Just today, I noticed on the forward agenda planner that in 2 weeks' time you'll be presenting the results of the audit of the Safe City hotspots in the city. And in that proposal, you've identified some hotspots, and there's within the budget you've got an allocation to, I don't know, is it quite a capital works, to alleviate some of the safety concerns in those areas. And I guess my question is it true that you're presenting in a couple of weeks? And if so, is there any money within that budget to support this proposal and therefore we could actually approve it tonight?
Yes, there is. The answer is yes, there is funds. We have in the current financial year's budget an allocation of around $100,000 for the project, which is looking at the first year council plan action around undertaking an audit of the safety of public spaces. So we've been we've had a look at and sort of done a desktop audit of hotspots within the city around a number of not hotspots but areas that could require safety improvements, but the allocation of that budget amount will we won't require all of it because I think any of those improvements will probably require a call on the capital budget in future years. So we've actually, in terms of what we've got allocated in the operating budget, we probably won't need that full amount, and it does fit with improvements in this, or extending the taxi rank
Thursday night. The review of the Safe City strategy, which I know is underway, and I don't believe it actually has the taxi ranks as a... necessarily as a priority. Now this question, I guess, is to Keith. If I was able to move a recommendation, obviously, an amendment, obviously, Councillor Foster to agree that we could actually approve tonight that the $50,000 could come from that budget and we don't therefore have to recommend it to Council. Is that correct? I'm not sure who to ask that question of. Is that of Keith or is it of...
If the money is already allocated in our budget, then Future Melbourne can allocate it tonight.
So...
It's
not new money.
No,
we've got...
All it is a real... It's moving around what we've...
No, if we've budgeted to spend this, we don't need to go to council. We can do it at FMC.
That's right.
And it's within the Safe City line item.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. So if...
Hang on 1 second. Let me ask, because the one thing that flows from that is there anything else that you would recommend to us above such a recommendation as this to take up what's left of that already allocated money? Is there a higher priority than this mega taxi rank for you in that safety audit?
Not at this stage, no.
Okay. So in that case, Councillor Leavitt.
One final question of clarification on that particular issue. I don't fully understand the nature of the underspend. Is it because we're fulfilling the action in the annual plan with less funds, or are we actually going to see a variation to the action in future?
It'll be with less funds because what we've got allocated is operating budget and will probably require capital. So we've been able to, through doing the planning for it already, we've done some work internally that saved us a little bit of funds, and we're having a workshop in a couple of weeks around looking at an audit of the safety of some of the spaces in the city. So we can draw down on other funds across the organisation as well through existing allocations.
So we definitely won't be seeing a variance report on that particular annual plan action item in future. It's merely an underspend.
Yes, well, it's a reallocation. We won't, so I suppose the answer is we won't be coming back to you and saying we need more money because of this is coming. There's been a call on this budget item. So
what I'm doing is I'm checking for sure that the funds are available for FMC to go
Absolutely.
To because if we then have to consider a variance later on, the decision we'll be making tonight is quite inappropriate.
It's definitely there.
Thank you.
the microphone, sorry. That the Future Melbourne Committee approves, so remove recommends that council. And then at a cost, at, where it says at a cost of $50,000, put from the community safety operating budget. And I'm not sure, because I'm not sure about this $6,200.
No, just delete that.
So we don't need that now.
Yeah. And you can delete everything after budget, actually.
Do you want to put the starting time in?
No, it's there.
To delete, yep.
Yeah.
Sorry, I need to scan this information.
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yep, I just found it.
Okay. Is that agreeable to the mover? Is that agreeable to the seconder? Councillor Foster, would you like to speak to it?
Very briefly, thank you, Lord Mayor. Look, this has been identified initially, the Queen Street mega taxi rank, that is, has been identified initially by the police as an enormously successful initiative that is not a new initiative at all. But given its success, it did seem logical to me to look to whether or not there was scope to extend this over the summer months by one night to accommodate the additional patronage that the city tends to experience during the warmer months. It's certainly clear that we should expect quite a number, as we were briefed on earlier, quite a number of people coming through on a Thursday night and being attracted to this initiative that's already quite attractive to those over the weekends. Importantly, we know that that issues arising generally from alcohol use over the weekends tend to drop when people are moving, and this is one way to get people moving out of the city when they want to be out of the city. It's safe, it's well lit, and we know too that you can't rely on just one initiative to improve city safety. This is one of many, and that's the reason that we've come up with this one.
Councillor Oak.
I obviously support my amended recommendation. I supported this idea when the Lord Mayor raised it in the original, the previous council.
Happy days.
I'm so tired again. It's a Tuesday night ritual. Yes, when it was first raised and approved as a safety measure in the previous council. I am cognizant of not only a comment that Councillor Mayne made, but also the CEO made early today, that even though I've managed to find within the safety budget a reallocation, it is technically new money, and we need to be mindful of the fact that we do have a budget that is not necessarily constrained, but it is... Sorry? There is not a budget emergency. However, we are aware that that there is pressure on it, and that we have spent significant funds on community infrastructure, which is important, but we need to be mindful of this. And I mentioned the CEO made a point today that whilst this is a trial, once it is in place, there could be an expectation that it's ongoing, and to make a decision to remove a successful taxi rank could be a difficult one. I guess if it's successful and it's meeting safety city goals, so and maybe the decision won't be that difficult. But if you know, we do have other competing needs for this money that arises from the audit that we're going to be presented in 2 weeks, and also the review of the safe city strategy, I'd hate to think that you know, ongoing maintenance of this would be at a detriment to any of the other safe city measures. But I think it's a good recommendation, and yes, summer is finally upon us, so it's good that we're going to get more people home safely.
Is there a speaker against the motion? Is there a further speaker for the motion? I just want to say, very good pick up by Councillor Oak, and The only hesitation we could have had about the extension of what has been a very successful program is that rather sombre note that the CEO sounded about extra money. This is very elegantly moved in the community safety operating budget, and then quite rightly it will be a consideration in future years for recurrent funding should it prove to be successful. But it's removed, I would have thought, the only obstacle to it, and that is whether we'd be prepared to put $50,000 to it. So excellent pick-up, Councillor, and saved us the necessity of taking it to Council as well. Yes, Councillor Wong.
We cancel, we remove the second paragraph.
The yes. No, but it has mid-December 2013. I don't think we need to go to that length. I think the understanding is that it's Thursday. Yeah. Yeah. I think they get it. Yeah. Yeah. Is there a further speaker to the motion? Councillor Foster, do you wish to conclude debate?
Briefly, look, it's worth noting too that there's some, there has been some enthusiasm for other safe city taxi ranks around the city, and that there isn't yet really substantial evidence that there would be take up for them. So it's important to go with what we know works, and that's this one up at Queen Street. So it will be good to have an extra night available to patrons.
In that case, I'll put the motion of those in favour. That is carried unanimously. Thank you. Sorry, I better do that. Sorry, councillors, I better do that again because we do have a councillor missing. So, Councillor Louis, Councillor Foster, Councillor Oak, Councillor Leppard, Councillor Mann, Councillor Wong, Deputy Lord Mayor and myself. We now allow a 15-minute period for the remaining officers to grill us should they wish to. Should there be any takers? Very good career move for the... please, go right ahead.
My name's Sally Brown. I've got a question for the Lord Mayor.
Sure, Sally.
How do you feel the public questions time has gone this year? I understand it was an initiative introduced in March, before and after after meetings.
What a very good question. The answer is I do try to answer questions, as I did in Parliament, in the spirit in which they are asked. If someone comes before us with a legitimate question, then they deserve the respect and the resources of the organisation to respond to them. If they are using it as a point of debate, I think we've got to be careful about allowing that. We have had what you might call repeat questioners. That seems to have disappeared a little bit. But tonight's questions were interesting because both questioners tonight have come before us on exactly the same issue in a previous meeting. And I think we do have to be careful about not allowing people to simply come back for bite after bite after bite of the cherry. Nevertheless, I do think it's been a pretty interesting addition. And if people are prepared to use it properly, I think it's a very useful tool for our wider community. But I think we have to stick to the fact that it's not a speech to us. It's not a chance for making the same argument again and again and again. It is a chance to have a brief preamble and then a question which then should be answered, you know, not just by me, but by any councillor who wishes to, or indeed, if we need to take it on notice and get back to that questioner with an answer.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Sally. Any further questions? In that case, I want to thank members of the public and management for their interest and attendance and declare the meeting closed at 8:06 p.m.